Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
The Ford F-150 truck helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. New features like the available Pro Access tailgate improves access to bed and cargo, including when towing a trailer, so it's easier to load in tight spaces. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open's Masters Class. That's right, Busted Open Podcast, available 7 days a week here on Apple, Pandora, Stitcher, and Spotify. And don't forget, you can listen to Busted Open Monday through Saturday live, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern time on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156. And I love Busted Open's The Masters Class because that's when we bring in the true legends, Tommy Dreamer, Bully Ray, Mark Henry. Guys, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm in Miami.
Nice. I know, because AEW is back on the road. But you know what? Not only is AEW back on the road, we're going to see crowds back for WWE, but this is significant when it comes to pro wrestling history. July 7th, 1996, the third man was revealed, Hulk Hogan, the start of the NWO. And this has kind of been NWO week when it comes to the world of pro wrestling. So, man, it really changed the landscape of pro wrestling. So, Mark, let me go to you, because you were part of the WWF / WWE at the time. So what did you first think of the NWO being formed?
The first time that when Hogan, first I was mad. I was like, you fucking traitors. Like, you know, it was that type of, you know, feeling. And then it got to us getting our ass beat on a consistent basis. And you starting to feel like, damn, like, what do we have to do? And at that time, we were characters. We were, you know, late 80s wrestling passe. And then you have the NWO hijacking the trucks, crashing the limos with sledgehammers and burning, like picking a cigarette lighter behind a film reel and burning the WCW logo and putting NWO on there. And you know, like everybody wanted to be a part of the NWO. It was troublesome for me because Sexual Chocolate was fun, but it wasn't going to compete with NWO doing something, and everybody had to re-evaluate what they were doing in the ring and even how they were doing it, because you look soft, you look too comical, it wasn't tough enough. And also during that time, you had a company, ECW, who was hitting people with shit that people were throwing out of the crowd. It was anarchy. It was rebellion. It was against the systems. And the WWE had to evolve, and it ended up evolving with the Attitude Era and Vince making a pivot and saying, look, we're going to take from ECW. We're going to take from what they did at WCW. We're going to create factions that, you know, the Nation was born, DX was born, and then you had a fight. And it ended up being a fight that we was able to, you know, c- come back and win it. And but a lot of that was the fact that they kind of beat themselves too, because they oversaturated their top guys and not let the younger people and the mid-card guys get enough love. And, you know, eventually people start getting tired of seeing Goldberg win 70 times. They got tired of seeing Hulk Hogan beat the best people in 5 minutes or less with entrances. Like, I mean, it became very, all right, I've seen this before. Let me turn and see what they're doing on WWF. And then you had, you know, The Undertaker and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. And it was a very diverse group of guys, Ron Simmons. And then you had the DX, and you had the Nation, and The Rock was starting to emerge. And I mean, we started picking up so much momentum because of the other guys in DX, the other guys in the Nation, the other guys that, you know, like the Val Venuses of the world went away. And then it was about, you know, Road Dogg and Billy. And when, I mean, like, it was so much stuff going on, like Steve Austin, the glass had broke. And once the glass broke, man, it was a different game. You know, we know who the Undertaker is. We know who Shawn Michaels was. And you saw the emergence of Steve Austin being the major player. Like, it just, you know, it became that the war was pretty much over. But NWO changed pro wrestling. Like, when I say change pro wrestling, they hijacked the company. It was more important. NWO was more important than WCW. And the Booker T's and Billy Kidman's and all of those guys that were in the mid card at that time, they didn't get to develop until later on when, you know, now you got Hulk Hogan that couldn't work a 20-minute match no more. You couldn't, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, they weren't working 20-minute matches. They started bringing in everybody. Everybody became NWO. They had Booker T. They had X-Pac. How many people was in it? At one point, there was like 10 members.
More.
And,
more than 10,
and,
yeah.
And that couldn't even save it. So, like, they didn't do right by it, but when they were rolling, man, there was nothing like NWO. I mean, it was, golly, you know, you had the anti-NWO guys, the Bret Harts and people that didn't want to join it, but didn't Bret end up joining?
Yeah, and NWO 2000.
I'm like, NWO was an infection. It was like The Matrix. You know, anybody that saw that movie, The Matrix, and the agent, he told Neo, he said, humans, they're a disease. They infect and they spread and that's what NWO became. It started off something unbelievable. And it ended up being the thing that stabbed their own self in the back.
Yeah, and then the 83 weeks were over. Tommy, and you know, when this happened, July 7th, 1996, I'm guessing you were probably 24, 25 years old in the middle of a feud with Raven at ECW.
Yeah, I agree with so much of what Mark says. I always say WCW had two things besides money, even though they lost a boatload of it. They had the NWO and they had Goldberg. Those are their two greatest creations that really started with, you know, that whole paradigm shift. And we're talking about 25 years where we're still talking about to the day. For me, ECW was the real revolution. And like Mark said, we were doing edgy stuff because the business was flat. The business was kind of dead. And then here came ECW with violence, with real life storylines. I mean, I could talk about it so much, but it's just talking. I don't want to talk just the sake of putting over ECW, but I'm just talking about history. And
Tommy, can I interrupt you for a second? I know this is important. The first time that I saw a ECW match, I'm flipping, and I turn it on, and everybody, there's like a big melee of people in the ring. I mean, people are hitting everybody. It was everybody against everybody. And all of a sudden, this motherfucker threw a toaster from the crowd into the ring. And, you know, I wasn't used to see. I'm like, where's the security? You know, what the hell? And the guy grabbed, I don't even remember who it was, grabbed the toaster and bang! I mean, like, I'm like, hard way. Oh, he dead. He dead. He killed him. Like, ECW was doing stuff that we had to copy. We had to. I got hit in the face with no hands up with a damn cookie sheet. Never did that before. And they didn't explain that to us in training. There was no damn wrestling school that talked about, hey, when you take the frying pan to the face, and you take the toaster to the crown, to the dome. It was none of that. And WCW, in all their greatness, they copied it too. ECW was a razor blade. Everybody else was a knife that had been used 1,000 times and needed sharpening again. And when you started to see ECW, you said, listen, man, we need to find like some smooth rocks and start sharpening our blade because this is going to take over. And your work as a babyface in ECW was something that, you know, we gave you your flowers. We told you how you are arguably the most underappreciated babyface in wrestling history. WCW didn't have a Tommy Dreamer. The WWE, we had Shawn Michaels. Everybody loved him. The fans. The fans loved him. But that was you were the Shawn Michaels of ECW. And that who did WCW have? I'll wait.
They had Sting, but I mean they put him aside for a year where he did nothing.
Right. And what happened? Didn't the infection get him too?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's just bad booking and being on top and not realizing your competition is doing other things. The best part about Paul Heyman, myself, ECW, if everyone was going to the right, we went to the left. And if they started going to the left, we went to the right. And, you know, you think about ECW with or how that era, we had literally Shane Douglas go on the microphone and talk about Dick Flair. And behind the scenes stuff of suppressing a talent that was never talked about. It was well known, but it was well talked about. Or just all these different things like tables. Guys, I mean, everyone knows, like, I mean, look at Bubba. He made millions of dollars getting tables, but that wasn't in the business before this whole era. And a guy named Sabu did it. But, you know, talking for me, I also look at it like the simple thing is the NWO T-shirt or, you know, the Austin 316. T-shirts were not a thing back then. But whenever I always remember, dude, like yesterday, I could hear him either leaving. Did you see all the ECW shirts at the television tapings? Paul would tell me. And he would be like, it's almost like the rebellion is starting and everyone was part of this cool gang known as ECW. And then they were wearing their colors on the other places. Yeah. And I would be like, hey, Paul, they're still just wrestling fans. He goes, no. Like it means something. And it did. I mean, you also think about we had a guy named Sign Guy who was a fan. And then all the other signs just kind of started. But like we did all these things first and then, yeah, everyone else was smart to jump on it. And even Vince, because when we did that invasion of Monday Night Raw, anything could happen from there. And it all kind of just kept on going along. It was just I took everything personal, Dave, because that was my mentality. because I really wanted ECW to thrive. And when people would leave, I'd be like, screw them, they're replaceable. And honestly, too, like when we talk about the when then WCW in one, you know, swoop took Eddie Guerrero, Conan, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, and they were instantly replaced. And like when we were going violence, and this is the beauty of Paul, we were going violence tables. Now everyone starts doing it. He brings in all these wrestlers. All these wrestlers then leave. He brought in Japanese. When we brought in Lucha. I mean, all these things that are normal today was not around then, and but they were spotlighted, or even simple as women. Women were involved in so many main events, and yes, they weren't having matches, but they were the pivotal parts of so many storylines. ECW, Paul, you know, myself, Paul Heyman, literally were the real NWO before it was NWO, but you can't discredit what happened because they made way more money with it, and it was just, but that's from my experience of it all.
Tommy, you brought up a real unbelievable point right there with the t-shirts. I remember when ECW t-shirts started showing up on Raw and SmackDown and Velocity and every other show we had. And they also, then you started to see the NWO shirts. And they had the production people. You remember Ruben and all of them, Koshe and everybody, like, and the guys that were before them. Hey, if they're sitting over there and they have that shirt on, take it. Give them a WWE shirt or tell them they got to take that off. And it became a real war. That's when you start saying, no, you can't wave your flag here.
Yeah.
That's a war.
And Dave, like, I was in charge of the merch. You have no clue. Like, I mean, $60,000-$80,000 cash that we would be making from shows, you know, and Paul would literally pay the boys from the merch money. I would write it down like I was an actual accountant and had everything credit. And Paul would just be like, ah, fine, whatever. Give it to me. Shove it in his bag. But I mean, $30,000. We would, at regular shows, $20,000 to $30,000 on t-shirts. Anything that we printed, people bought. It was like the Bullet Club when the Bullet Club was super duper cool. But again, Dave, you were around. T-shirts weren't a thing.
No, not until
Think
then.
Of like if you go online now trying to look up wrestling t-shirts, like there's this whole faction of it. But look at the era where it started. It started around then.
Just to chime in about the t-shirt thing, I just did a virtual autograph session and I just happened to have a brand new ECW pay-per-view t-shirt from Hardcore Heaven. It sold for $900.
Wow.
Damn.
That just, and it wasn't worn or anything. It was brand new. That just goes to show you about the t-shirts. This is not an ECW podcast. This is about the NWO, but somehow we've drifted, and I just want to make one or two little points before I get into my NWO take, because my take really piggybacks off of something that Mark said. People slag on ECW because ECW went out of business. ECW was meant to go out of business. We were meant to crash and burn. Tommy will say we were meant to stay around forever, but when you really look at it, it's better to burn out than to fade away. And we never faded away. We burned out, and we burned out in style. And Tommy was there to the last day. ECW, I've said this before, ECW was the Napster of the pro wrestling business. Napster changed the way we listen to music, but they went bankrupt. ECW changed pro wrestling forever, and they went bankrupt and out of business. It deserves its spotlight. We talked about, we're talking about the NWO, but Mark, you mentioned ECW and how the WWE had to sit up and take notice and how WCW had to sit up and take notice. That's as a company. What were you guys saying? What were the boys saying in the WWF locker room at the time in 96, 97, 98? Were you guys talking about ECW?
Hell yeah. It was like, man, these fucking dudes are crazy. But look at the fans. And then when you start looking at the fans, and you see the culture change, you either buy in or die out. And then you saw the Rock hit Ken Shamrock in the face with a chair. Then you saw the Edge and Christian progression, the Matt, the Hardys doing shit, that diving in the crowd. That was never heard of before ECW.
I mean,
hardcore wrestling today.
It's the Foley Rock I Quit match.
You had, Gage on the show yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Was that yesterday?
Last week.
Yeah, it was during the week. Last week, yeah.
Last week. He paid Bully homage. He said, hey, man, I respect. And Bully put it on the business. The business of ECW spawned backyard wrestling. It spawned hardcore wrestling. There was no such thing. It was wrestling. ECW had the hardcore championship and all of this. It made this whole world that they live in. So NWO saw that and said, you know what? Let's take it even further. Let's create complete anarchy and let's take over the company. Let's kill WCW with NWO.
And so they made their own cool
kids. And it worked.
They made their own
cool kids. Man, Hogan was going down to the ring with the air guitar. Like, I don't give a fuck what's going on. I'm going to the ring. Somebody finna get their ass whooped in about 30 seconds. And I'm not going to break a sweat. I'm not even going to have to change my gear. I'm going to get my limo and I'm going to the next town. That mentality, that asshole, that became what the new heel was. Guys had to work super hard to be a heel. Had to never break. Didn't shake hands. Man, there's people, you can go back to the Nation time and people like, man, you used to be an asshole because I had to be a heel. Now, all you got to do is no show somebody somewhere that you was, I mean, like stupid shit.
But Dave,
like you don't have to work hard for heat.
Dave, you called them the cool kids. And, you know, we're talking about how the NWO changed pro wrestling, as Mark said, and he called it a bit of an infection. I think the NWO, in a way, hurt pro wrestling also, because the NWO became cool heels.
Yeah.
And I don't know what type of cool heels draw real money. Because if you have a cool heel standing in the one side of the ring and you have a cool baby face standing on the other side of the ring, who are you cheering for and who are you booing? You're now cutting the crowd in half and it becomes shades of gray. And I don't believe in shades of gray in pro wrestling because I don't think they work. So here's, as Mark said, here's Hogan, who's supposed to be the biggest heel in the company, coming down to the ring, playing the belt and coming out to Voodoo Child. This guy's cool as all hell. It's like when Triple H was the heel world champion. Why do I hate you, Triple H? You're a world champion. You're hanging out with Ric Flair, and you have two strippers waiting for you in your shower. You're my idol. I don't hate you.
But also, too, to go back to Mark's point, because Mark's like, where's the baby face? Where was the baby face? And you had that, as you said, they had that in Sting, but then Sting was gone for an entire year. And then when he did come back and they had the match with Sting and Hogan at Starrcade, it was a flop. So right there, like once again, it's like, hey, they're the cool kids. That's who I want to cheer for. And that savior that was supposed to come down and save, it just, you had him off of TV for a year and then it was a flop at Starrcade. So that, I think, was kind of like that Starrcade to me was the beginning of the end for things for WCW.
And everything became so edgy. Sorry, Bob. Yeah. Everything became so edgy. I think it's amazing that we have three people who were wrestling during this time. And you can go back to the date where Hogan turned. The Outsiders going was a big thing. And again, that wasn't like it was so fresh and like talking, like before Mark said, like things you didn't say on television, and it did change the business. That's why we're still talking about it. But then that attitude of like, hey, we're bigger than thou is also what led to their downfall when they, again, Raw wasn't live and they were taping. And when they gave away the spoiler of who won the title being Mick Foley, it changed. And it was like that cocky and that confidence, because everyone's like, oh, wait, someone's winning a title. And then all eyes went a different way.
No,
it's amazing. Well, it's like they ate their own destruction.
Yep.
Talking about the cool heels for a second, this is why I appreciate MJF so much right now. Dave, guys, as entertaining as MJF is, wouldn't it be very easy for him to become a cool heel? He could probably do it in 15 seconds because he's so good on the stick. But you know what MJF does? He stays in his fucking lane. To all you people who don't understand what I said about Eddie, understand what I'm saying about MJF. He stays in his lane. He knows what it takes to get heat instead of wanting to be the cool heel that's supposed to be hated, but everybody really loves. He's a student of the game, because becoming the cool heel really doesn't do anything for anybody. And this is how I think the NWO hurt in a way, because I know all three of us, myself, Tommy, and Mark, have seen entirely too many wrestlers want to be the cool heels. And this business is void these days of real heels, and I've been preaching it to the end. There are only a handful of guys, like top of my head, a Corbin, an MJF, Roman to an extent, you know, Roman to an extent, but who are the real heels in our business? 20 years ago, bang, 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 we could rattle them off. 50 years ago, forget about it. The business was built on heels. Not anymore. And this is how I think the NWO has hurt us in a way.
Well, Bully, to go back to your point, you said ECW, you know, burnt out. And in a lot of ways, the NWO faded away, unfortunately. But for a bright time, and especially July 7th, 1996, when, you know, Hogan was that third man and debris was getting thrown into the ring, it was a moment in time 25 years ago that no wrestling fan will ever forget. Guys, Tommy Dreamer, Mark Henry, Bully Ray, guys, appreciate your participation. The Busted Opens the Masters Class drops every single Sunday. Pandora, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And don't forget, listen to Busted Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Thanks for listening. Catch us Monday through Saturday on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.
Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Ed Robinson. The associate producer is Gabby Laspisa. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. Special thanks to SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, the legendary Steve Cohen, and SiriusXM Fight Nation Program Director, Marissa Rivas.
SiriusXM Podcasts.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.